The Man in the Suit, submitted by Danny.
My friend and I were walking down the street around 8. Now, it's good to know this side of town is dark and only about 2 streetlights are working. A man starts to walk up to us. He was a good-looking man with a nice suit and slicked back hair. This was the conversation. Him. Hello, Danny. Do I know you? I hope you do. I'm pretty good at remembering faces. Is that right? Is this some sort of joke? No, just... What? I'm starting to get annoyed now. Yes, this spot will do good. That spot, the friend I was with, that exact spot, he died in a mugging. Fast forward a couple of weeks later, I was walking my dog when the same man showed up. I asked him, who are you? I go by many names. I say, damn you. He said, yes, many have. Now, I'm carrying a crucifix with me and a gun. Hope it was scary enough for you as it was for me.
All right, welcome to the True Scary Stories with Edie podcast. This is the podcast where two stand-up comedians read scary stories submitted to us by our fans, the Uglies. What's up, Uglies? So great to have you here for another episode. This is a podcast that has commentary after each story. If that is not what you like, you are free to opt out now and check out Just the Terror, which is our other podcast coming out on Sundays with all the terror, none of the talk in between. Jeez. This story was submitted to us through our Facebook group by our ugly Danny, and if you want to do that same thing he did, submit your story, you can do that on the Facebook group at True Scary Stories with Edie, or you can do it on our Instagram at True Scary Stories with Edie, or you can do it on our website.
Yeah, at True Scary Stories with Edie. TrueScaryStoriesWithEdie.com.
Okay, good. So finally, to the story, this guy says, I go by many names.
Yeah.
They call me Matt. That would have been my cue to be like, all right, annoying? Is annoying one of them? I'm trying to sound so cryptic.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like one of those kids in middle school who like came to school with like a horse tail.
Yeah.
Like, I go by many names.
And tries to be cool.
Yeah, I do samurai fighting at my house.
Or
I go by many names.
Or a kid that always walked around with a briefcase. It's like,
a little business.
I'm a little adult. I'm a strange person.
Yeah, or the kid who had a mustache like in fourth grade.
Yeah.
And it was mostly a mustache that he drew on.
Oh, yeah?
And tried to pretend. Well, I had a kid in my fourth grade class who would like draw one or two hairs to try to make it look like he was getting one.
That's funny.
I guess that's probably not everybody's experience.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
That's funny.
But yeah, so I think the crucifix is a great idea. I think the gun is a great idea. I'd love to know what kind of gun. I've been studying guns lately with my father.
Yeah, it was this story. I mean, it's interesting. I guess the friend died in a mugging, which is a little wild. I don't know how that happened in the timeline of this story.
So is Danny under the impression that this guy killed him? The man of many names?
Either this guy willed it to happen. I think Danny's under the impression this guy's the devil.
Oh.
Or something like that.
You know what? That would be some devil... behavior. I go by many names.
Yeah.
Cryptic. Yeah. He's the king of cryptic.
Yeah. And he likes to hang out in dark towns where only 2 lights are working. So he's a strange man.
Right. But Danny, let's not flatter ourselves here. That probably wasn't the devil himself.
No, it's probably just like a
henchman,
a rogue man in black.
You know, like when you would go to the mall and you would see Santa and your mom would tell you that's not Santa. It's one of Santa's helpers.
Yeah.
That's what this guy was. It's not Satan. It's one of Satan's helpers.
Yeah.
He reports to Satan and tells him if you've been good or bad.
Yeah. I don't think Satan's very involved in a lot of the bad things that are happening in the world. I think he pretty much has his 3 involvements. I gotta go after the Pope.
Right.
I gotta go after any other religious thing. And then I just gotta keep being me.
Yeah. I think of Satan, he makes a lot of deals.
Yeah.
We know he makes a lot of soul deals.
A lot of rock and roll musician deals.
Right. So I picture he's a very busy dude. He doesn't really have time for the small town stuff, but he does probably send some of his best people.
Yeah, he's just kind of a record label exec now where he's like, look, I just want to sponsor bands.
Right. Yeah. Like, just don't bother me with the small deals. Just give me the bigger deals. You know, when Christopher Walken comes back, send him my way.
Whoa. Well, he did do the prophecy, right?
Yeah. He's been involved in some stuff.
He's creepy enough to be on.
Well,
be
people
with
do
me.
Think he's been involved in some stuff that we'll get into. Anyways, let's keep going. This next story, I could just go on about Christopher Walken. I know a lot about Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know.
Do it on one of the weird talks with Edie Gibson,
Christopher Walken. Okay. This story is called After the Credits, and it's submitted to us by our fan, Alec.
Hey, Nick, Edie, and Uglies.
Woo!
I love listening to the podcast and all the stories. I decided to tell y'all one of my own stories. Back when I worked at a movie theater right out of high school, all my coworkers would tell me the stories of a theater that was haunted. Everyone always talking about hearing or seeing things in there. I didn't really believe it at the time, even though I always had a creepy feeling in there. I always liked to make jokes about it to my coworkers when we would clean and I'd be like, oh, watch out for the ghosts, you know, stuff like that. One night I went in to clean it by myself. I was sweeping up some popcorn on the floor when I felt a hand grab my shoulder hard. I turned around to see who did it, only to find myself in an empty theater. I finished cleaning and got out of there. I never made a joke about the ghost and try to always be respectful when I'm in that theater. Hope you enjoy this short story, and I have many different stories if you like this one also.
We do want to hear all of them. Make sure to send them to us. We are waiting, so thank you. I think all theaters are haunted, honestly, because you have all these people who have either, if it's an acting theater, if you know anyone who does plays and stuff, you know they never leave and they just want to showboat all the time. So if it's an acting theater, it's definitely haunted by annoying theater people.
Yeah.
I can say that because I was and still am an annoying theater person. And then also movie theaters are always haunted.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably like old patrons that have died at some point in the movie theater's history. They go watch
right,
a movie.
Right. But also think about what happens at movie theaters.
What?
People, there's scary movies. There's art. There's a lot of energy put into a lot of people in one space at one time. If you go see a scary movie, you're there with 50 other people all getting scared, all putting out energy, all putting out vibrations and things like that that are tracked spirits.
I was always scared of...
It's basically like a culmination of energy. You're bringing all these people together to burst out energy at the same time in art, whether it's being scared or being moved or whatever. So that's going to attract things.
Movie theater 10 scared me the most when I would have to clean it.
Yeah, doesn't it seem like it was like a Dumbo where like the thing was going to come down? Did you ever see Dumbo?
No.
There's a scene where the mom like goes crazy and it's in a it's in one of those tents and then it comes down. It's really scary.
You have all the different ideas of theaters. I had to one time screen the newest Exorcist in a movie theater all by myself, and we had to do it like after the work day was done. You had to do it like at midnight, and I could not handle it because it was just in this big theater all by myself.
Because
you have to make sure it's all put together
correctly. Right, and you have to be like up in the projector area. The scariest time Nick and I both worked in movie theaters. Scariest time I had in a movie theater, I don't know if you guys remember this, but there was a movie called Perfume, and it was about this guy who killed women. He like had a sense of smell different than normal people, and he was making these perfumes and he wanted to make them out of the 12 most beautiful women, but he had to kill them to get their scent.
I've never heard of this movie.
He made them. It was like this like weird art movie, but it was also scary. And at the end, it was really scary music, and I always had to clean up the theater, and the music was really scary.
Oh, I hate that. The scary music at the end of these movies?
And if you do see Perfume, it's not that good of a movie. But at the end of the movie, the guy does make the perfumes.
Oh, no.
And I think he gets in trouble for killing the women, but he, like, takes the perfume out, and he drops it on his wrist, and then everybody smells it, and they all, like, fall in love, and they can't. They're on drugs. They're like moving around and like, oh my gosh.
It's a very arty movie.
Yeah, and it was like very, and everyone's like gets naked and just like moves around because he made the perfect pure perfume.
What if this movie never existed? It's just something you saw.
Then I would like to make it and make some money because I don't have ideas that
very
creative.
Extreme.
All right, let's keep going. And today's topic is murder, close to me.
Yeah.
So I guess this is pretty obvious what it's going to be about. It's going to be about murder. It's going to be about murder. And it's close to you. This is strange because we were talking about Christopher Walken in the beginning of the episode. And I didn't tell you guys, but If you don't know about Christopher Walken, he was with Natalie Wood and her husband on a ship when Natalie Wood mysteriously drowned. So it was a small ship, so obviously he knew something about what happened to her. There's a lot of speculation that maybe Christopher Walken killed her. There's speculation they were all drinking and doing drugs and she accidentally drowned. There's speculation her and her husband got in a fight. But Christopher Walken never said anything about how she really died, and it's suspected he knows exactly how.
There's so many things that Hollywood actors know, but they're just people who want to be stars. They just want to be actors. They're just as cowardly as anybody. So a lot of them are like, I'm not going to say anything because you're not supposed to talk about each other's drug addiction,
sins. I think he definitely knows what happened. I don't think he killed Natalie Wood. I think something else happened, but he knows exactly what it was. And I don't think she accidentally drowned. Her and her husband, Robert Wagner, had gotten in a big fight. So there's definitely some foul play, but he's never come forward and said what he knows.
I think that, you know, people think there's a darkness in Hollywood, but I think most of that darkness is situational and accidental versus actual evil. I think a lot of people think that, you know, you become famous, you become evil. I think you're just around situations that you're not prepared for, and you're like, I just got to leave this room.
So her husband and her husband Robert Wagner and Christopher Walken both said that she must have slipped and fell in the ocean unaware.
Dun dun dun.
But they didn't look for her or anything, and so it's kind of strange.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyways, maybe we'll do a weird talk about it. Let's go to the first story, which is Quick Stop at the Deli.
Back in August 2006, I was a 20-year-old working in a deli near my house while I also attended a community college nearby. I remember it was a warm summer night. I was working till close, which was 7 p.m. Around 6:30 p.m., the only two people left in the deli were my boss and I. I was stocking drinks in the cooler towards the back of the store when I heard the front door open. I looked and it was a guy I had never seen before. Working at the same deli for 8+ years, you tend to remember people. So I figured he might have been from out of town. He had red hair and it almost looked like an afro. He walks back towards me, goes into the cooler, and grabs a peach Snapple. As he walked past me, the smell hit me. I motioned to my boss and pinched my nose. He and I had a brief chuckle before I started walking to the front to ring the guy up. I get to the counter. As soon as I looked up at the guy, I felt my stomach drop. His eyes were black. He had pale skin and this blank stare. It's hard to explain, but I felt as if he was looking through me and not at me. I asked him if he needed a bag. I got no response. He paid for the Snapple, walked outside of the deli, then stood at the front of the store. We started closing up the store. 7:30 comes around. This guy is still standing at the front of the store, leaning up against the glass. He was so strange that my boss thought he was staking out the place waiting for us to leave. But technically, he was a paying customer, so we couldn't tell him to leave just for being weird. So we shut the lights off and started walking out. My boss turns to the guy and says, "Hey, I don't mind you hanging out here, but please don't lean on the glass." The guy turns to him, doesn't say a word, and just smashes the Snapple bottle on the ground at my boss's feet. Now, my boss is a big guy. I'm talking 6 foot, 380 pounds and covered in tattoos. My boss gets in his face and says, "What's wrong with you, dude? Now you're gonna have to clean that up." The guy stares back at him, again, not saying a word. The whole time I'm thinking to myself, this guy's either insane or has the largest testicles on earth. After a few seconds, he gets in his car and drives off. I go back inside, get a broom, sweep up the mess, and we call it a night. We both just shrugged it off and thought, isn't the first time we had someone high come into the store? The next morning, I put the news on. The first thing I see is that guy's face. Turns out the same night he stopped by our deli, he murdered and dismembered his neighbor right down the street from the deli. The cops caught him pulling up into his parents' driveway the next morning with the woman's severed head in his trunk. To this day, I wonder whether or not he committed the murder before or after he came to the deli. I don't remember seeing any blood on him, but then again, I wasn't really looking for any.
Right, and in those situations, obviously hindsight is 20/20, but you just got a creepy person, and how you react in that moment, knowing now that this guy killed someone right before or right after your interaction with him, kind of makes you think twice about the interactions that you do have with people and how you treat them, because it's like, hey, you say the wrong thing to this guy, he just killed somebody.
That Snapple could have been the one thing keeping him from snapping.
Yeah. Maybe he had the Snapple and then he snapped.
He's like, I'm going to drink this and calm down. I want to murder somebody. But and then he was like, hey, buddy.
And then he was like, I want the peach one. And then he looked and it was the diet peach one.
Oh, and then it turned.
That Snapple made him snap.
Yeah.
There's a better joke there. I just can't figure out the word. Snap, Snapple.
No, it's that's it.
I'm going to crack Snapple pop.
Well, that's
a cap in this guy.
If he bought Rice Krispies, then that would be that.
Right. Okay. yeah, so it is very creepy. If it was me, I would wonder to the point where I had to look it up. Did he kill them before or did he kill them after I had this interaction? What time was the person pronounced dead?
Yeah, it's wild.
It's crazy to me that this person didn't obsess over it like I would. I'd be like, I have to figure out when, you know? And then I would be forever, like, in my head, trying to... In every interaction with a person, I'd be like, did they just kill somebody? are they going to go kill somebody now? Because also you feel guilty if it's after they had the interaction with you.
Yeah, because it's like this make them
go. Was
this
the last straw? Was it the snap?
Oh.
All right. Bad uncle.
When I was 2 years old, my uncle committed a double murder and suicide. He was a meth head and had been taking money from my grandmother. Finally, one day she told him no more. That just happened to be the day I was at their house. He went to his room and brought out a shotgun. He shot my grandfather in the face. My grandmother ran and grabbed me. He shot her in the back. She dropped me and rolled over. He pulled out a big knife and hit her in the neck with it. Then he turned his attention to me. I remember this vividly. I was crying. He picked me up, rocked me for a minute, and sat me in my swing. He pointed the shotgun right at my face. Then all of a sudden, he just stopped. Like something was fighting with him, like physically prevented him from blowing me into a million parts. Next thing I know, the gun is in his mouth and bang. That's all I remember. My parents never told me a single thing about it. Up until a year ago, they didn't know I knew about it. When I told my dad, he started crying and tells me how I was just swinging in my swinger like someone was pushing me. I had forgotten about it until I was like 13, and all of a sudden I remembered. It messed with my head for a while.
So they think the person swinging them was their grandparents.
In my mind when I read this, yes, I thought maybe the grandmother, because she was the one that ran to go save the 2-year-old, is the one that, like, her spirit was fighting her son back, and then was just like, I'm going to rock you until someone shows up.
Man, grandparents are the best. They just got shot.
Yeah.
She just got shot and she's like, okay, well, I got to make sure that...
that they're still good.
Well, we still don't want you to cry. Do you want a chewy bar? Do you want some soup?
Yeah.
Seems like something your grandma always has. Soup. Very sad story. I'm sad that they remember that. I don't remember anything from being 2, so that's terrible that the likelihood they would remember is so small.
Yeah,
and then
the
fact that they do, just because it's such a traumatic experience.
Yeah.
I hope, well, at least they know that their grandparents are still looking out for them. Or someone was looking out for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the good thing is that somehow this person survived. And I think that's what they have to come to grips with. Like, well, I was that close to death. I lived, you know?
Mm-hmm. And they have a guardian angel, which is sweet.
Yeah.
High school boyfriend.
I met a guy my mom dated back in high school. I was about 13. My parents and brother were out doing something or other. I was home alone. We had 3 dogs at the time. One was a Wimmeraner. The doorbell rang. The dogs kind of go nuts a little. I go to the door and the Wimmeraner, a 130-pound male, is doing his usual big, bad, excited thing. The weird guy I've never seen before at the door. I say hi. He says hi, then he asks for my mom by her maiden name. I informed him of her married name and says she's out now. I was allowed to tell people this now because my parents figured between me being 6'2 and the other dogs, especially the Wimmeraner and a big dog, anyone that wanted to try and force their way in just with me there was going to be in for a very poor day. Oh, okay, well, if you could tell her that Mike stopped by to say hi, I'd appreciate it. Here's my card. He hands me his card, then stops and asks, oh, is that Reginald? Reginald was the name of my mom's Wimmeraner when she was younger. Same breed, but not the same dog. That would have made this dog over 20 plus years old. No, he's been gone for a while. Oh yeah, sorry, my mistake. I closed the door. I think it's weird, but whatever, people can be weird. I just go back to doing whatever I was doing. My mom and dad come home. I mention the guy and hand my mom the card. First time ever I think I've seen both of them just go totally white. Truly terrified, but trying not to lose it. I've never seen my parents like this. Mom holds the card like it's a loaded gun that was pointed at my head. She looks at Dad. He walks off to the kitchen, calls my grandparents, Mom's sibling, and her spouse, and starts to explain things. While he's on the phone, he's getting ready to pick up my brother from wherever he is at the time and is locking all the doors. I think at one point, my dad asks Mom if she wants him to get one of the handguns out. She says no. He leaves and says he'll be back soon. My mom puts the card in the kitchen, then sits down by me and tells me what's going on. She dated this guy in high school. Her younger sibling dated his younger sibling too. Cute story. Mom and this guy break it off eventually. So do their siblings. Nothing acrimonious. Just normal high school stuff. Mom, the guy, and the rest of their class graduate. That summer, the guy turns 18. The night of his birthday, he murders his entire family. Mom said the whole town was in shock, totally taken aback by it. Rumors spread. Some people thought his father could have been abusive. His father was distant and cold towards his son. People suspected maybe he hit him from time to time. At the trial, it comes out that the minute he turned 18, his dad threw him out of the house, hitting him and chasing him off the property. Allegations are made that his mother, his sibling, did nothing to stop it. Later that evening, he came back, broke in, and killed his father, then his mother, then his younger sibling. Cops found him covered in blood sometime the next day, wandering in a daze. He got put away for just short of 30 years, got a little time shaved off for helping set up an inmate rehab program. My mom and dad look up the records. He just got out. They figure he must have been trying to make amends, maybe reestablish old connections. They're not sure. Family meets up, kids all kept at one house in another room, and they discuss the situation. We basically go on lockdown for a while. We take more precautions. The kids are never left at home alone. School teachers and counselors for all the family's kids are told about the guy and told to call the police if they see him. We're told to tell our friends to report if anyone unusual starts to ask about us. I get to explain to my friends that my family's terrified that the guy my mom used to date, who just got out of prison for killing his family, might randomly show up at my school to try to talk to me for God knows what reason. He never tries to contact any of us again. Sometime later, my mom sees an article. She'd set up a Google alert for his name. She finds that he's been caught with child porn. With previous crimes, he's sentenced to basically life in prison. He'll be well over 70 by the time he gets out. So yeah, not exactly Stephen King, but it was creepy enough at the time.
That is definitely very creepy. Because it seems like that's not really a good reason to kill your whole family, is that they kicked you out when you turned 18. I mean...
Well, I mean, if the father was abusive, then that he was pushed to that edge.
Right. Unless you really have nowhere to go and you're like, well, I guess I'll just move into jail.
Yeah.
For a while. Yeah. I commend you for being able to say, Weimer-Rammer, whatever.
I had to YouTube and I still think I said it wrong because I YouTube
Weimer-Rammer?
I YouTube some Scottish person saying it. So it was like Weimer-Rammer or Weimer-Rammer.
I would have just replaced it with something else. I would have been like my bulldog. obviously a reason to get scared. I think I've told the story. I met somebody that my dad used to date in high school once. I went to school with her kid.
Yeah.
And we became friends. And then when I went to my friend's house, he was like, "There's my friend Edie Gibson." And she was like, "Gibson?" She goes, "Are you related to Ed Gibson?" I was like, "Oh yeah, that's my dad." And she's like, "Oh, I used to date him in high school." And I was like, oh, that's so weird. And then when I went home, I told my mom and dad. And I remember my mom got mad. She was like, "Oh, Julie? Oh, yeah. Oh, she was a hoochie anyway. She was not." And I was like, "Yeah." But luckily, she didn't kill her whole family. She just became a lawyer.
Yeah. I think what happens, I had a friend that went to jail at a young age. And he told me,
you get institutionalized.
What you get... It's not so much that. It's a time stop. So whatever you were...
Right. So when you get out, you're still... It's like the next day when you went in. And everybody else has just moved on so far. So you're like, okay, let me go check out
my old high school girlfriend.
My friends.
Yeah.
And then they're like, that was 20 years ago. We all have kids and we have moved on past that. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. All right. Very creepy. Let's keep going. Mitchell and Alf, written by R. Marty 78.
I was once featured in a St. Jude Survivor newsletter when I was about 5 years old in the early 90s. The newsletter went out across the country and apparently into Canada. There was this guy named Mitchell that called my family up out of the blue because he had read my cancer survival story. He lived somewhere in Canada. He claimed to be this big-time Christian and wanted to talk to me about God and prayer. My mom let him talk to me for whatever reason. This guy actually just wanted to talk to me about Alf. This Canadian dude named Mitchell was obsessed with Alf and somehow got a hold of our mailing address and sent me tons of Alf merchandise. Coloring books, pencils, Alf everything. For some reason, my parents let him talk to me whenever he would call. They bought into his God stuff and liked how he sent me Alf stuff. This went on for about a year. Then he asked me if I had ever heard of John Wayne Gacy. He told me who he was and that he had escaped him when Gacy tried kidnapping him when he was a kid. He told me I should tell my parents they shouldn't trust strangers because you never know who you could really be talking to. I remember he didn't sound menacing when he said it, just matter of fact. Of course, my parents freaked when I told them that. They changed numbers and called the police. The police could never really do anything since this guy did live in Canada by all accounts and hadn't really threatened me. Also, keep in mind, Mitchell somehow had our mailing address and knew exactly where we lived. We had plans on moving soon anyway. Fast forward 10 years to about 2001. We live in a new house, a new state, everything unlisted. I'm now 15. What did we get in the mail? Yeah, you guessed it, an Alf coloring book.
All right, this is weird because Alf is so freaky to me, and when I was a kid, it scared me so much. I hated Alf. I didn't understand how people liked it. It was so creepy to me. That's seriously something I really, really hated when I was a kid. It
really?
It creeped me out. Yes. Okay. And I haven't thought about it really since now, but yeah, I hated Alf when I was a kid. It's so creepy.
That's funny how that's the most creepy part of the story to you.
Well, I just haven't heard of Alf in so long, and now that I'm remembering how I felt about it when I was a kid, I really was scared of it.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Was it just because he was a puppet, or?
It just looked scary to me, and I didn't like its voice, and it really creeped me out. So it makes sense this guy, who is a creep, would send Alf. Alf is the creepiest of all the characters you could send to a kid.
Yeah.
His parents are kind of dumb for letting just some guy message their kid and stuff. For what?
Yeah.
A free mammogram, you know? Exactly.
Saw your kid's name in a newsletter.
But did he ever actually help? No. So it's like, why are you letting him talk to your kid? That's weird. It's a ball dropped on the parents' part. If someone was sending my kid Alf stuff, I would just mail them the kid and say, leave us alone.
Yeah.
I'd be like, okay, fair, you can have him. Just no more Alf, please. You can have the kid. Just no more Alf, please.
That's funny.
I'll send you the kid.
I wonder if this guy was like,
it's
so
creepy.
Yeah, and also he was so like terrorized by the fact that he was kidnapped by John Wayne Gacy and escaped.
Right,
that maybe
he's
stuck in that kid's mentality.
Well, also, when we talk about the mentality of like, people who make offenses to children, it's usually because they went through that same offense. And so then they perpetuate it on and on and on. It's very rare that they didn't go through that trauma and then perpetuate it to somebody.
Yeah.
So probably his trauma from what he went through, he's trying to perpetuate that onto the kid.
Yeah.
And he might also, the reason he's like into Alf so much is probably trying to get back that kind of innocent feeling from when he was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, like something really bad happens to somebody and they kind of like just get obsessed with the time before that happened. Like, okay, I'm just going to collect a bunch of kid stuff because that was before. I feel like I missed being a kid because this bad thing happened to me. Like Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he was abused as a child and I think he was stuck in that child.
And the reason he said he was like that was because he never got to have a childhood. So he liked to have. But anyways, that's what it seems like to me, and it's really like the parents dropped the ball. Yeah. What do you think?
I obviously agree about the parents dropping the ball just because somebody calls up and says, I like God. Can I talk to your kid? Doesn't mean that you should let them.
Right.
But I guess this is the 90s, so people weren't very aware of how dangerous this situation could have become.
Right.
I think maybe they got an Alf coloring book in the mail because it got forwarded to their new address.
And then they finally caught up to them where it was.
Yeah, I think maybe that was
I feel like the mail isn't that vigilant, you know? It's like, we've had this for 10 years, but oh, now we found out where you live. Here's your elf coloring book.
Yeah.
They're not that vigilant. They just throw it away. if anyone who works at the mail center is like me, they probably burned it. Got rid of it. I don't like Alf.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
I don't like Alf. Okay.
I thought you were just committing a federal crime.
You just reminded me of one of my personality traits I've forgotten about. I don't like Alf. I hate Alf. You know how the uglies are always like, you hate details. No, I hate Alf. I hate Alf more than I hate people playing with Ouija boards.
I wish we had.
I hate Alf.
I wish we had a soundboard where I could play his little. Hey, stick around for Alf. Coming back up to these messages.
I don't think I ever even watched it. It creeped me out so much.
That's funny.
I wouldn't have even watched it. All right. Thanks for bringing up that repressed memory of how much I hate Alf.
Well, let's go deeper.
AC Repair, written by Emily F. 114.
My grandmother told me this story a few years ago. I still get chills when I think about it. She was living in Louisiana with my step-grandfather, Bill, in a small apartment complex. One day, a nicely dressed man came to the door and told her other tenants were having trouble with the AC units, so he was inspecting them. She opened the door to let him in. At the same time, Bill and his sister came around the corner. The repairman immediately stepped back outside and told them he would come back later when they didn't have company. Several hours later, my grandmother heard sirens outside. When she went to find out what happened, someone told her a lady had been murdered in her apartment and the killer got away. Months later, my grandmother was sitting in her den watching TV when a special report came on about Ted Bundy. When his face came on, she immediately recognized him as the AC repairman.
Oh, man. Wow. We got a lot of the OG serial killers in this episode.
Yeah.
We got John Wayne Gacy. We got Bundy now. All right. I would be stupid enough to let them in. I'd be like, okay. Okay, person I've never seen before. Yeah, sure.
You must work here.
Yeah, well, I remember hearing about that with the whatever that thing is on the side of your house that keeps, like, it's, like, got a gauge on it and it's gray.
The electrical.
There's someone who like needs to inspect it. I think it might be like the gas or something to your house or whatever.
Well, they inspect it to write down the number to charge.
It's something that's like a special person has to come and inspect it. Someone was impersonating being that person.
Yeah.
And they were killing people.
They were coming into the house when it's not in the house. It's outside.
Right. Yeah. I remember something about that. I'll have to look it up. All right. Let's keep going. Okay, we figured it out. The thing on the side of your house is the residential electric and natural gas meter.
Edie figured it out.
Okay.
I had it figured.
That's what I was talking about. All right, this next story is called Almost Caught, and it comes to us from Six Pints a Second.
It was near Halloween time when my friends and I were telling ghost stories. My friend said she was going to tell the story about her parents' first date. She said she didn't like telling the story since it was actually true, but we prodded her on. Her future parents had spent a nice, if awkward, first date. Around the time that they would have said goodnight, my friend's dad suggested that they go for a midnight hike up Provo Canyon. He apparently knew the place since he had done a fair amount of rock climbing in the area. The two drove up the mouth of the canyon, got out of their cars, and started hiking under just the lights of the stars since it was a new moon. At some point, her dad starts getting a bad feeling. The pathway ahead, which would pass under some trees, would be dark, and because it was getting quite late. But he ignores the feeling and presses on. In later retellings of the story, her mom would say that she had felt the same feeling at what was probably the same time, though she didn't know the trail like he did. A minute later, the feeling came back to her dad. He ignored it again. He started walking a bit of the way into the trees. Then his foot hit something soft in the middle of the path, under the trees. It was too dark to see just what this soft thing was, plus the bad feeling was stronger than ever. Instead of finding out what his foot had bumped into, they both agreed to hightail it out of there. Years later, after being married for some time, they were watching an interview with the serial killer, Ted Bundy. In response to a question asking Bundy to describe the time that he felt the closest to being caught, he explained about the night that he lured a girl into Provo Canyon. Bundy had just killed her when he heard some people coming up the trail. He explained how he hid in the trees just in time, only to watch some guy walk right into the body and for some reason just turn around and walk away.
All right, so this links up with the story before.
Bundy was almost caught so many times.
Yeah. Well,
serial killers almost get caught so many times.
Because that's what they want. That's the whole, the thrill of it all, is the almost getting caught. They love that part.
Yeah.
And then they don't. And then since they don't, it makes them feel superior, makes them feel smarter. Oh, I can't. It makes them feel invincible.
Yeah.
It's the power. That's why people kill. It's for the power. And then when you almost get caught but you don't, it's more power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. It seems like it'd be fun, all the power.
What it makes you think is, like, how many times people almost got killed by a serial killer just to have a moment.
There's a statistic that's like you walk by a murderer, like, every day. You walk by a murderer. I mean, unless you're at home. I'll have to look up the statistic, but it's like in your life you encounter so-and-so, so many murderers.
Yeah.
But the term murderer.
Yeah, murderer. I was going to say murderer.
What are we talking about here? We're talking about someone who was, like, in the war, or are we talking about, like, a serial killer is the thing. But there's also that myth, like, that you eat, like, 3 spiders a month or something.
Well, I don't think that myth was proven wrong, because they were, like, spiders wouldn't willingly just crawl into a warm mouth.
Yeah. Contrary to the Itsy Bitsy song, spiders don't just do things without a purpose, okay?
Yeah.
They're not just going to crawl into your stinky mouth.
Yeah, they'll be like, oh, this is too warm and weird for us.
Okay, let's keep going. Still Flickering On, written by The Mapes Hotel.
In 2011, my next door neighbor, Joseph Nasso, was arrested for the murders of 4 young women. He was on parole. Added note, he had been a traveling photographer and lived in Northern California. During a routine check, his PO found a store of weapons, which felons are not to own. Upon further searching, the PO found photos and journals detailing the murders of at least 10 different young women. Some of the photos were of the victims posed sexually with mannequins that he owned. He's currently on death row. The prosecution was able to match up 2 more women to his evidence, leading to a conviction on 6 of the 10 murders he committed. His MO also matches the murders of 8 to 10 more women in the New York area. So he may have killed as many as 20 young girls. He was dubbed the double initial killer. All the victims' first and last names started with the same letter. Some court documents state that he even tried to find places to dump the bodies that also carried the same initial. Now to my part of the story. In December of 2013, I was contacted by a man that owns and operates a murderabilia site. He sells mementos and artifacts from famous killers and crimes. He had seen me on the news and was curious if I had anything from my neighbor, as he was interested in buying. That was the first time I had considered going in the house, which has sat untouched since his arrest. In May of 2014, my husband finally talked me into going inside. The things I saw inside that house haunt me to this day. They are far scarier than any horror film because they are real. I will try to explain the house in as clear detail as possible. It is difficult to describe the layout of the house originally, as my neighbor had completely remodeled the inside with fake walls, fake flooring, and a substantial attic crawl space. Between the old walls and the new walls, there were 4 to 6 inch gaps. The flooring did not match. It was a mixture of different types of carpet and cheap vinyl. We curiously peeled up part of it to reveal a fake floor raised 6 inches above the old floor. We were not brave enough to enter the attic. There were large holes punched in the fake flooring, walls, and ceiling, most likely from police. The first room we entered was a small 5x6 space with no windows, as it had been formed by the new walls. The door had a large steel slide lock on the outside so as to lock someone into the room. Against the left-hand wall was a futon mattress with a pile of soiled, dark brown stains that could have been anything, flowered blankets. There are also children's sheets, Spider-Man, Transformers, etc. The back of the room had a door leading into the bathroom, but 6 4x4s had been bolted over it, so no one was getting in or out of that room. Against the right-hand wall was a long and low dresser. Above the dresser was a row of industrial outdoor track spotlights. Make of that what you will. Inside the dresser were many pairs of women's panties and pantyhose. There was also a large roll of twine rope, bottles of shaving cream, and various sizes and shapes of rusty saw blades. Some, the round types that would go into a table saw. Some, the long ones with the handle you use to saw through things. There are also several bloody razor blades. The next door had a bare bed in it, another dresser, and six large black trash bags. There's also a closet. Inside the closet, we found a medium-sized freezer Ziploc bag with drug paraphernalia. The outside of the bag had a poem written on it in lovely black scrawling cursive. One for me, for every two of them, three promises lie at the end of every fourth trip. Inside the dresser of this room were various children items. Little stuffed bears, street chalk, Tonka toys, Hot Wheels. I did not look in the large plastic bags. The last bedroom, also formed by false walls, had nothing in it but 10 long dead, stinking plotted plants. The odor in that room was atrocious. The bathroom offered nothing of interest except a large selection of expired pain and sleeping pills, some dirty rags under the sink, and a nefarious-looking dark ring around the tub. The living room and kitchen area were joined in a style I believe they call open floor plan. The two areas contained 11 standalone freezers, the type that are long and low. Some were very, very large. We did not open any of them. Kitchen was odd. Dirty dishes and pans were still on the stove, right alongside long rotted piles of food and spices, as if a meal had just been finished cooked. The only thing that gave the scene any age was the undisturbed dust layer. My neighbor had covered an entire wall in the kitchen with shelving, which were full of jars common to people that pickle and can their own food, except the jars contained things that did not look like food, at least food that I've never seen. Strange slabs of whitish meat, large knotted vegetables that looked like tree roots, a mixture that looked like solidified bits of plastic and jelly. The areas around the living room and kitchen were covered in religious wall hangings, pictures of Christ, wood slates with psalms burned into them, crosses. Most of the psalms focused on themes of forgiveness and women being submissive to men. All the windows in the front door had large wooden boards bolted over them. The door was ceiling to floor 4x4s, the same ones barring the bathroom in the first room. Absolutely no one was coming in or out of that house through the front. There was one set of 4x4s that went around the entire living room, kitchen, and parts of the second bedroom that had large hooks driven into it. These are large hooks like that would be used to support something heavy. I stopped counting at 200 of them. It occurred to me later as I was thinking about them that I know what the hooks were for. There was one photo entered into evidence from inside the house showing his dolls. He had 10 large-sized dolls and mannequins all dressed in ladies' evening wear and lingerie and wearing full makeup inside the house. He also had suitcases full of mannequin limbs and $130,000 in cash taped behind his stove, though I never saw those, just read about them in the trial notes. Some of the dolls were wearing ball gags, others were tied up with S&M-style ropes, but they all had large nooses tied around their necks. I went back through some of the reports and was able to locate the photo of all 10 dolls. The prosecution had entered it as evidence of his deteriorated state of mind and because each doll may have represented a victim. Sure enough, the dolls were hanging from a series of hooks located on the back of the front door. We believe that there are so many hooks around the house so he can move the dolls around with him as he went room to room. At this point, we had enough and decided to leave. Passing back through the house, my husband called out to me to turn off my flashlight. I did, but the light didn't disappear. It was then that we noticed the LED lantern. It was on the floor of the kitchen underneath the table. It was flickering, weakly, but still on. 3 years later, the research I've done on that model of lamp says it would be impossible for the batteries to last that long. Of all the things we saw in that house, that lamp was the most terrifying. Everything else I could write off as a bad dream, but that lamp made my skin crawl and still does as I sit here writing this. Glancing out my living room windows, I can see the darkened house next door, but I can't see through the boards on the windows to know if that lamp has died yet, or if it is still there, flickering weakly.
All right, wow, that was a lot to consume.
Yeah, well, I had that when I looked it up, but I was like, more for the uglies,
right? didn't answer the question of the whole story was, did he find anything to sell?
he probably found lots of things he could have.
Yeah, I mean, I found some dolls that represent the actual people who were murdered. Is that the kind of
is
thing
that what you want?
Looking for?
Or you want shaving cream?
The kind of person who buys artifacts from serial killers is literally someone who's asking to be haunted.
Yeah.
That's it. You're like, I don't care. Send me all of the bad energy. Send me all of the murdered victim
spirits. I'm going to put it on eBay and I'm going to sell it.
That is a real, whoever buys it is just asking to be haunted. And it seems like something a really rich person would do who's very creepy. Like, oh yeah, I have John Wayne Gacy's...
His clown makeup.
Yeah, his clown makeup. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I have his gun.
No, what you have is too much money.
Yeah.
That's what you have. Anything else about this? It was just very scary.
I mean, it's just very scary. It's once again, close to murder.
Right. And then this guy could even just make a whole business out of selling things out of this guy's house. I'm surprised that the house hasn't been cleared out yet.
That's one thing
I guess
that
people
I was
don't
want
to buy it. Who wants to buy it?
Yeah.
Not me.
Yeah, because it's a murder house.
Right. Yeah, so I guess...
with too much to fix, because it sounds like there's so much stuff in there.
You would think, though, someone would come through and try to get everything of value and, you know, but I guess... it depends where they are, I guess, but maybe they're, like, in the middle of Wisconsin, in rural Wisconsin, there's no one around.
Northern California.
Oh. I heard it's a
Marin
dump.
Marin County.
I hear it's a dump in Northern California.
Oh, man.
As a girl from Sacramento, I don't know where Marin County is.
I looked it up, and I was like, oh, I'm going to say Northern California, because that's where it's at, because I'm going to freak Edie out.
Yeah, that's where the thiz is what it is. Well, there's a lot of rural places in Northern California.
Yeah.
But, yeah, good story. Let's keep going. All right, we are on to the last story, and I hear it's a doozy. Before we get into that, the boring announcements. The time when you can tone out, stop listening, call your mom, tell your lover, because we're going to tell you about t-shirts. We still have a few t-shirts. If you want to get a True Scary Stories with Edie t-shirt, you need to get on it, because we have already sent out 3 batches. The price is going up, right?
Yeah, to 25.
Now it's 25, including shipping, which is still good.
Yeah, it's still good.
And we're not really making that much of a profit. So just pay it. Just pay it.
It's to support us in a weird way so we can keep doing
this. And we don't even really make a profit. So just pay it.
Yeah.
All right. That's what we get for being so great. But you know what else we should get for being so great? Since we just do all this, 5 stars.
Yeah.
Why haven't you given us 5 stars? This is the part of the show where I just scold them for a few minutes. Why haven't you given us 5 stars?
It.
Yeah? Why not? Huh? Why haven't you cleaned out your car? Look how messy it is.
I do want to give a shout out to Maite from the RGV. Apparently on Anchor, she's been donating money monthly to us.
Oh, we don't even know.
I didn't even know. I just saw it. I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, man.
So
we didn't know. Whoa. Well, thank you very much. Is there anything else I could scold them about? Why haven't you joined the Facebook group? Why haven't you started flossing at night? You got to floss at night.
Why haven't you talked on the forums on the website? I got to go put up some subjects.
Right, go on the website too. All right, besides that, go join the Facebook group, True Scary Stories with Edie. Go join the website. Go join the Instagram and give us 5 stars, please.
Yep.
Anything else?
Nope, that's about it.
Begging for stars, t-shirts, join the groups.
I think so.
All right, I think that's it. All right, this last story is called Bob and His Friend.
Back in the 1980s, I worked in law enforcement. I've never encountered such a demented psychopath in my entire life. It was July 1986, and I had to listen to Bob's confessions. I cannot legally give out his name, even though he was executed, but he did some really awful things that I could never really get out of my head. Our police force was in a small town that we will call Meadowbrook. I was raised there. My wife and I were also raising our 2 kids there. We lived in a little old whitewashed farmhouse that I inherited from my parents. It was just your typical small backwoods country town. Anyway, my partner had called me into work really late in the evening to try and get this guy to confess. He was a tall, chubby guy with a baby face. My partner actually bought him McDonald's because he was not going to talk until he got something to eat. We had to bribe him. Well, the Big Mac did the trick, I guess. Bob's fingernails were very dirty and his teeth were a bit yellowed, probably from smoking. He wore a white t-shirt and a pair of old blue jeans. Bob told us he was in and out of foster homes since he was a teen. His mother always called him the bad child of his brothers and sisters. She used to beat him with a yardstick. His brothers and sisters were favored over him, and he never seemed to get the affection he craved. When Bob would get teased by his siblings, he would cry and they would laugh at him. He tried to strangle his little sister when he was 10. Bob was laughing as he told us she actually passed out for a moment. At 16, Bob got a girl pregnant and she had a miscarriage. Bob said it was probably because he got drunk and punched her in the stomach. He was very abusive to her. The sickest thing ever is that Bob kept the miscarriage and told her not to flush it. He got it out of the toilet and told her that they would bury their baby together. Bob told me how he kept it for himself and dissected it himself in his room because he wanted to see what human insides looked like. He kept it in a box for a few weeks. And it began to stink, so he flushed it. He didn't want his parents to find out. Bob told me as he got older, he had a craving to kill someone. He wanted to know what it was like to experience the death of someone by his own hands. He said the thoughts were invasive and made him feel very powerful. This is where the demented part comes in. Bob was in his 20s and went out to meet some friends at a local bar. They were all drinking and playing pool for quite a few hours. One of the friends had been talking about Bob behind his back. He was saying nasty things about Bob, about how he was weird and how they all should just stop hanging out with him. One of the friends said Bob kept ogling his wife, and another friend did not like Bob's obsession about serial killers. Well, Bob found out about it, so Bob devised a little plan. Bob made sure not to drink too much. He planned to get the friend really drunk and bought him extra drinks throughout the night. Later on, he asked if he could drive his poor drunk friend home. On the way, they stopped at the railroad tracks, drank some more, and threw glass beer bottles at the tracks. Bob then pulled out a gun and made the friend get on his knees. He asked him why he was talking bad about him and why he ever did to deserve such a slap in the face. Bob's friend told him to go F himself, and that's when Bob did it. He shot him once in the arm. Blood began pouring out of the wound. The friend was in shock and tried to run away, so Bob jumped on top of him and began choking him. The friend passed out, and when he came to, Bob made him put the gun in his mouth and began yelling at him, "You're going to kill yourself tonight, and I'm going to watch." The friend began crying and begging for mercy. Bob was very excited and animated when telling me this story. I just sat there wondering how could any human being do such a horrible thing and be happy about it. Bob began rubbing his friend's blood all over his lips and face, tasting it. He began to stick his finger in the bullet hole he made and moving it around. It was pure torture. His friend began screaming in pain. He shot him again, this time in the leg. Bob confessed he choked him out once more. He hogtied this poor unconscious man's arms and legs with a rope he had gotten out of his truck. His friend didn't weigh very much. He was a small guy in stature. Bob picked him up and shoved him inside his blue 1980 Chrysler New Yorker. It was all too easy for Bob. He drove around smoking a cigarette and heard his friend moaning in the back. He drove up a long, muddy driveway which led to the local mill where Bob worked part-time. Bob opened the trunk. It was a desolate area, not a soul around. He told me how he popped open the trunk and how his skinny friend was begging for mercy. Bob hoisted him up and made him walk, moaning in pain, all the way to a huge wood chipper, blood dripping down his leg. Keep in mind, in the 80s, old farm equipment had no safeguards. He laid his body down and started up the wood chipper engine. "Please don't do this, please, please," begged his friend, who was beginning to look really pale and began vomiting. Bob didn't care. He told me this only excited him more. He shoved him in feet first. The machine showed no mercy and sucked his friend's almost lifeless body right in. He told me how he watched his friend's last moments. The poor skinny guy's face looked contorted as he tried to grab with all of his might to pull himself out. Bob told me how he heard the loud grinding, popping noise of the wood chipper and how he enjoyed the smell of fresh death as his friend was being grounded up in the machine. Sucked him right in. He could hear bones cracking and muffled screams as his friend's body was being ripped to shreds. His remains sprayed up into the air with bits of blood, bloody wood, and the little fragments. It was all over so very quick. Bob just stared in awe. It was the most gruesome thing he had ever seen. This sick man was aroused by the whole act of brutally murdering an innocent man. Bob seemed to be pleased with himself. Sadly, I had to view the awful crime, and that was not pretty. I think those images will haunt me till the day I die. You see, when someone dies in a wood chipper accident, it's a bloody pulpy mess, full of teeth, hair, nail fragments to collect for evidence. You have to be careful to pick up the bone shards carefully and to not cut yourself. It can smell really bad days after finding such remains. I felt sorry for whoever had to clean the rest of that machine out. What happened to Bob? Well, he got the electric chair many, many years ago. I was happy because he couldn't hurt anyone else. He had no feelings of guilt or remorse. I felt sorry for the poor family who lost their son. I wish that there weren't so many crazy people in the world capable of such horrid things. I've kept a lot of terrible stories of myself that I had witnessed over the years. Some of them I had to have therapy for. When people are murdered, you don't always hear a full in-depth confession of exactly what happened. Sometimes you get the bits and pieces and enough to accuse them of it. Sometimes things are kept from the public. I'm happily retired now. My kids are grown, and now I'm watching my grandkids grow. My wife and I still live in the same whitewashed farmhouse. Life is good.
All right. Wow. But not for Bob or no. Bob's friend.
Nope.
The very, 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 very sad story. I think that, Bob was a bad dude, obviously. What sucks is this guy kind of knew Bob was a bad dude, and he tried to warn other people. And then Bob gets mad at him and says, "Hey, why are you talking about me? I'm a nice guy. Why are you talking bad about me, huh? Tell me, I'm a nice guy. What? You think I'm not nice? Huh? Huh? Well, you're going to pay. You're going to die now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're not nice. Look, this is why I was talking about you. And now you're mad at me for talking smack about you. But look it, you're about to kill me. Well, so you're not very nice.
You got to be careful when you're a little guy. You can't have big, crazy friends. And I've actually made that one of my survival things through life. Like, if I have a big, crazy friend.
They want to get in fights with other big guys.
And they, you know, they carry you and they want to, like, put you into things. It's like, no, we're good. The minute that I see somebody's kind of a little off, I kind of distance myself. I'm like, I don't want to deal with this.
Right. Well, yeah, this guy knew that Bob was a little weird, but he decided to go out drinking with him alone.
Yep.
Which is a little strange. But very, very, very sad story. It makes sense. I mean, if you're little, you should hang out with other little people. That's why there's two different dog parks. There's the big dogs and the little dogs.
Yes. And the little dogs don't go, they bark at each other, but they don't flip each other over.
Right. You don't hang out with the big dogs if you're a little dog. All right. Anything else about the story? Very, very tragic.
Yes, very tragic. This was the murder
episode. Back-to-back murders.
Yep.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to the True Scary Stories with ED Podcast. This is the time to go give us 5 stars. Come on. And it's the time to clean your car out and floss your teeth, but mostly give us 5 stars.
Yeah.
We love you guys. Stay safe, wash your hands, and stay scared.